If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth interviews CNN anchor Jake Tapper. Plus, just for this podcast, Jake continues the conversation backstage at Studio 8G. But first, a closer look.
President Trump freaked out about the Russia investigation this morning after returning from a very awkward international summit. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Trump was at the G20 summit in Argentina over the weekend as he faced his most serious legal threat yet from the Russia investigation, which right off the bat has to be weird. Every time Trump goes to one of these international summits, he's under a cloud of suspicion. He's like a guy who goes on a date and tries to ignore the fact that his ankle bracelet is beeping like crazy.
What? No, that's just like a Fitbit. That noise means, it just means I got my steps in.
And from day one, the constant and increasingly damning revelations from the Russia investigation have made Trump's relationships with other world leaders super awkward. For example, in Bob Woodward's book Fear, Woodward describes Trump calling his Egyptian counterpart and president Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, saying, "Donald, I'm worried about this investigation. Are you going to be around?" Trump said it was like a kick in the nuts. Although, in fairness, Trump always looks like he just got kicked in the nuts. Right? And look at the way he stands. The way he stands looks like a freeze frame from America's Funniest Home Videos. He looks like a dad who was standing on the wrong end of a seesaw. And you can see how lonely Trump was throughout the G20 summit. On Friday, for example, world leaders gathered for the traditional group photo. And after the photo was done, Trump just sort of milled around by himself for a while. Look at him. He looks like he's at a house party and the only other person he knows is in the bathroom. Surprised he didn't do that move where you pretend to respond to texts, but in reality, you're just playing words with friends. Trump is desperate. Trump is desperate to socialize at these things, but he's so bad at it. For example, he signed a new trade deal with Mexico's president and Canada's prime minister, Justin Trudeau, who he's repeatedly attacked. Trump tried to claim the dispute had made them better friends, but Trudeau didn't seem to agree.
I'm honored to be here with President Enrique Peña Nieto. Become a great friend of Mexico and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who has also become a great friend. This has been a battle, and battles sometimes make great friendships, so it's really terrific.
Look at his face. Absolutely nothing. That face is the closest thing Canada has to a middle finger. In fact, on Canadian television, on Canadian TV, that face is considered so obscene, it has to be blurred out. And even when someone does want to be friendly with Trump, he messes it up. For example, he was supposed to take a photo with the president of Argentina, but watch as Trump walks away from the shoot early and is caught muttering off camera on a hot mic, while the president of Argentina stands there awkwardly by himself. That's right. Trump was caught on a hot mic saying, get me out of here. First of all, we're trying. Second, why? Why can't you stand still for like 10 seconds? I've had better luck getting my dog to take a Christmas photo in her Santa hat.
Is there a more exhausting job than man who has to chase President Trump?
Go get him, Jerry. The only person Trump ever seems truly comfortable with at these summits is Russian President Vladimir Putin. So Trump must have been super bummed when he was forced to cancel his meeting with Putin after his ex-lawyer, Michael Cohen, admitted in a plea deal that he lied about plans to build a Trump Tower in Moscow during the 2016 campaign. Although when he was asked about the meeting with Putin, Trump insisted that he canceled it not because of the guilty plea, but because of a naval skirmish between Russia and Ukraine. And as usual, Trump made clear that he definitely knows the specific details of what happened in that naval skirmish.
You know, frankly, in light of what happened with Ukraine, with the ships and the sailors, it just wouldn't be the right time. We can't allow certain things to happen. And, you know, it happened.
Okay, so he has no idea what happened. All he knows is it had something to do with ships and sailors. This is what I think went down. A national security advisor briefed Trump and told him, okay, Mr. President, all you have to do is tell the press that the United States is protesting the seizure of Ukrainian naval personnel by Russian forces in the Black Sea in violation of international law. And then Trump just, like, stared at him for 30 seconds. And the national security advisor said, just say Russians seized Ukrainian naval personnel. And then Trump stared at him for another 30 seconds. And then he said, you know what? Just say it's about ships and sailors. The revelation that Trump was pursuing a business deal with Putin in the summer 2016 during the presidential campaign is probably the most damning development in the investigation so far. It makes clear that not only have Trump and his closest associates lied repeatedly, both to the American people and to Congress, but also that special counsel Robert Mueller knows they lied, and he can prove they lied. And now Trump is freaking out, unleashing an angry tirade this morning on Twitter.
The president wrote this. Michael Cohen asks judge for no prison time. You mean he can do all of the terrible, unrelated to Trump things having to do with fraud, big loans, taxis, etc., and not serve a long prison term? He makes up stories to get a great and already reduced deal for himself and get his wife and father-in-law, who has the money, off scot-free. He lied for this outcome and should, in my opinion, serve a full and complete sentence. I will never testify against Trump. This statement was recently made by Roger Stone, essentially stating that he will not be forced by a rogue and out-of-control prosecutor to make up lies and stories about President Trump. Nice to know that some people still have guts.
Damn. There are only two explanations here. Either he got more bad legal news this morning, or someone kicked him in the nuts again. Also, I have a few questions. First of all, you know scot-free is spelled with one T, right? It's not a person's name. Trump probably thinks scot-free was the first person to get away with a crime. In the 1700s, a guy named scot-free, he stole a donkey and he got away with it. And that's why we still use his name today. Because of the donkey. Second, why does he put his own name in quotation marks? I swear, it's almost like even he knows he's not really the president. He could have saved us all a lot of time if he had just tweeted this. In order to believe that Trump did nothing wrong, you'd have to believe that he and his closest associates have been lying for 3 years, including to Congress, under penalty of perjury, because they're innocent. Just think about how many times their story has changed. First, they said there were no contacts with any Russians, period. And then they said that even if they did try to collude, nothing came of it. Then they said collusion is not a crime. And now Trump's defenders are reduced to insisting that he wasn't personally involved in the hacking himself.
Robert Mueller and his team of partisans have no evidence, not a whiff, of collusion involving Trump and the Russians. Trump Tower meeting, perfectly legal. The hacking, that's absurd. Trump wasn't involved in that.
Of course he wasn't. Trump couldn't hack into a computer even if the password was Melania. Trump's ex-lawyer lied to Congress about a business deal with the Russian government, and he told investigators he lied because Trump lied, and Mueller can prove it. Every new legal filing from Mueller makes clear that he knows what really happened, and when Mueller's done with him, I have a feeling Trump will be saying, this has been a closer look. Our guest tonight is CNN's chief Washington correspondent. He also hosts CNN's The Lead weekday afternoons, as well as the network Sunday show, State of the Union. Please welcome back to the show our friend Jake Tapper, everybody. This is lovely. Thank you for doing this. Happy Hanukkah to you, Jake.
Thank you as well. You know, it just reminds me, Hanukkah is our friendship anniversary.
It is our friendship anniversary.
Because, I'm getting wax on your nice
hair. That's all right, please.
When I first met you, you invited me to Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
My wife and I came up to see you, and it was Hanukkah, so I brought you a dreidel.
Yes.
And then, of course, I found out that you're not Jewish.
Yeah.
Which is, by the way, I have four more dreidels for you.
Thank you. Well, this is really nice.
And gout.
Oh, wow, look at this. I mean, the nice thing is because you probably thought, oh, I'm not, you know, the first guy who ever gave me a dreidel, but you were because I'm not Jewish, and I cannot tell you how little you're given dreidels when you're not Jewish. Or how little you ask for them. As a non-Jew, when you see a dreidel, you don't think, oh, man, they got it good.
Now, Hanukkah's not a holiday that a lot of Christians have Jew envy.
Of course, right now, I am celebrating Hanukkah because I married a beautiful Jewish woman, and we have Jewish kids now, so it's full Hanukkah over the Meyer
household. So the gelt, which is the worst-tasting chocolate in the history of chocolate.
Yeah.
Four Axel and Ash.
Yes.
Your lovely boys.
It lasts 8 days because no one wants to eat it. So I wanted, before we get to the news, you are a Philadelphia guy.
Yeah.
Philly guy, Philly sports fan. And so last night was the when your two worlds collide. Because obviously you live in Washington. The Redskins played the Eagles.
Yeah, I hate the Redskins.
Yeah. And it worked out.
Oh, my God. But there were that one play when Sanchez gave it to Peterson.
Adrian Peterson, who ran for a 90-yard touchdown. Is that just as unhappy as you can be?
It's I'm pretty sure Mark Sanchez throwing the ball to Adrian Peterson and a 90-yard touchdown is a sign of the apocalypse.
Yeah.
I think that's in the book of Revelation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when Philly ends up pulling it out, do you sort of lord it over your friends a fair amount?
No, not this season. This season's all about, like, okay, we got through that one.
Yeah. Haven't really gotten to enjoy being the Super Bowl champions because the year has been so bumpy.
It's been a rough year, but now we're finally, you know, anything could happen. We could end up not being in any postseason games, or we could end up winning the Super Bowl again, I think.
That's very optimistic. So you obviously, because of your job, one thing you cover is the day-to-day of the news, and one thing you've been covering this week is the passing of President George H.W. Bush.
Yes.
Tomorrow you will be live from the funeral, yes?
Yeah, I think actually it's going to be so cold that we're going to be in studio. But yeah, we're going to be covering the funeral from morning till afternoon.
I want to ask about covering a moment like this because a lot of people discuss when people pass away, be it Senator John McCain, be it George H.W. Bush. You know, how do you talk about someone who, their legacy? Because there are some who would say, you know, now's not the time to say anything negative about these people. But on another level, you know, for somebody like George H.W. Bush, this might be the last time he's ever talked about at length. For younger people who maybe didn't know him as a president, like, do you try to give the whole story or do you take this time to just be positive? Because as human beings, I think we think, oh, now's not the time to say anything.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Actually, I've been thinking a lot about it because, look, my roots are in alternative journalism. I worked for Washington City Paper and Salon.com. So my first instinct is to not believe the, you know, optimistic and shiny version of what we're being told on TV. But now I'm in a different role, which is an anchor and on CNN and when somebody passes, there is, you feel almost more like the role of, you know, of bringing the town together to talk about somebody. No, we don't want to shy away from somebody's full legacy. Obviously, you know, the 1988 campaign in Willie Horton was ugly and rough. But by the same token, just like with any funeral, you want to talk about the good things that the person did, you know, maybe more than some of the negative things. I mean, look, there are plenty of negative things to say about any U.S. president. Certainly George H.W. Bush is no exception. But I do think it's a time for people to appreciate the goodness of a president, you know, whether it's well, the other thing that's interesting is when it's McCain and Bush is that their histories and with, you know, with all the good and the bad and the nuance, they certainly are in the shadow of the current president, might look different than they would have had they passed away 10 years ago, 5 years ago, because there are a lot of things about George H.W. Bush that maybe people now appreciate that they didn't appreciate the time.
Yeah.
That was a diplomatic way of saying
that
it.
That was very diplomatic. Speaking of diplomacy, what was your takeaway of President Trump's trip to the G20? Is it what you expect now when he goes abroad and sort of rubs shoulders with other world leaders?
That was a fairly successful summit for President Trump, yeah. I thought. I mean, in the sense that there weren't anything, you know, horrendously embarrassing that took place.
Yeah.
And we walked out of there, and we still had alliances, and he wasn't tweeting nasty things to allies. So, I mean, relatively speaking, the thing that I thought about the most was that George H.W. Bush, he had just passed away Friday night, and there was President Trump at the G20 in Buenos Aires. And, you know, Bush was somebody who really believed in international institutions. He was a former ambassador to the United Nations. He was an ambassador to China. He believed in NATO. He believed in, you know, whatever you think about the first Gulf War. He had this international consortium. I think the U.S. even made money off of that war, literally. And President Trump, not such a believer in international institutions, not such a believer in alliances, not such a, with a couple of notable exceptions, not such a believer in all the things that Bush stood for. And yet, it's really Trump's Republican Party these days. And he represents a voter base that shares his view of these alliances. So I really thought, like, what a contrast it was.
One of the moments that maybe did stand out as the most that I feel left people the most taken aback did not involve President Trump. It was Vladimir Putin and Mohammed bin Salman having sort of an elaborate handshake, a very bro-y moment between, yeah. Were you shocked to see that?
Love your work.
Yeah, it did. It was that. You see that at the Vanity Fair Oscar party.
It made me nauseous a little bit, honestly. You know, here's two killers. And look, here's the thing. They knew that the cameras were there. I mean, this wasn't like some private moment in the back corner of a restaurant. They knew that the cameras were there. They were performing before the world, and they were delighted. They got away with it. This guy killed one journalist. Welcome! You know, I mean, I've been doing this for years.
Are you shocked by it? Because it does seem, you know, when you look back at the Watergate tapes, that required people to find private tapes, where it seems like we live in a moment where the president's Watergate tapes are just on Twitter every day. Like, what you used to have to find is now being given to you. That also looked like a moment that you would watch on a security camera and say, look, we had them shaking hands right there. And now just people are sort of baldly doing it out and open. Has that made it weird for you as a journalist, how people just sort of hand it to you as opposed to make you go looking for it?
Well, I think it's numbed all of us. For if there had been an email that leaked during the Obama years when our standards for these sorts of things existed, and it had said something along the lines of the tweets that Trump sent out this week about Michael Cohen is this and Roger Stone has guts because he's refusing to cooperate with the law, if that had been an email, you know, you'd be like, I got him. You know, this is my Watergate. This is my deep throat. Trump just tweets it.
Yeah.
He just tweets it. We're like, oh, yes, right.
Well, the genius of it is, you know, again, if Obama did it, we would talk about it forever because it would be the only time he did it. Whereas if you just do it every 3 hours, you just have to move on emotionally as a human.
We don't even get to it sometimes.
Yeah.
I think I didn't even get to... I don't even think I covered the day that Trump came back from Pittsburgh, from the synagogue where that horrible anti-Semitic massacre had taken place, and spent time tweeting about who had been nice to him and who had not been nice to him, as if that was on anybody's mind or anybody cared about that. I think by the time we got to my show at 4:00 Eastern, I think so many other things had happened, I didn't even get to it.
Yeah.
I mean, that happens all the time because there's just...
I wonder if they ever say to him, like, oh, President Trump, that this is trouble. These tweets are bad. He's like, don't worry, I'm going to do 50 other things. Don't have to worry about that. That's already in the rear view. Real quick, I don't believe this actually came out today, but we were expecting that Robert Mueller was going to release these sentencing documents for Michael Flynn today, Paul Manafort, we're hearing maybe Friday. These are called public-facing documents?
Yeah, it's bringing information to the public about why they're doing what they've been doing. For instance, for Flynn, it's about what Flynn has been providing for them since he's been cooperating for a year, I think they've delayed his sentencing recommendation for four different times because they were still cooperating. So this will be whether or not he thinks Flynn should face any jail time and what he's been doing to help.
Do you, as a betting man, do you think in the end people will be satisfied or disappointed? Let's put it, when I say people who have been looking to this Mueller investigation as the moment that it will all come crashing down. Do you think they will be disappointed or satisfied?
Well, there are certain left-leaning cable hosts that I think that they will be very disappointed because it won't be, you know, literally Donald Trump, a picture with him and a smoking gun and, you know, a tattoo of Vladimir Putin on his chest. But but I do think it won't be good.
Yeah.
I think it will be ugly. I don't think it will necessarily affect him per se. And he won't be indicted because there's Justice Department guidelines that sitting presidents are seldom ever, I think, never indicted. But look, here's the honest answer. None of us have any idea.
None of us have any idea.
Really? I mean, had you ever heard of George Papadopoulos before he was, you know, before that plea agreement came out?
I had not, no. Tell me real about this. Last time you were here, you were talking about your New York Times bestselling fiction book, Hellfire Club.
Yes.
You had written a nonfiction book a ways back called The Outpost.
Yes.
A wonderful, thrilling book about a real-life incident that happened. And now it's being adapted into a film.
That's right. Rod Lurie, the director, we just finished shooting in Bulgaria, where they had recreated the entire army base, Combat Outpost Keating. My family and I, we went to go visit and look at this army base. There are three actual veterans who served at Cop Keating. It was attacked, and it was a horrible battle in 2009. And they're working on the set. I hooked them up with Rod, and they're working on the set and advising on the movie, acting in the movie. And they were there, and they were kind of like spooked out, but also found it cathartic that they were on this recreation of a U.S. base that had been attacked and had been destroyed.
And obviously some lives were lost, and this is a case where now people are being, some of those real-life people are being portrayed in this film.
Yeah, so this is, that's Rod Lurie, the director. This is Jacob Scipio. He's a British actor who plays Justin Gallegos. Justin was killed on October 2nd, 2009, and he was awarded posthumously a Silver Star, and the Army just announced that they're upgrading it to a Distinguished Service Cross. So it's great. It's a way to honor these men and their families, and I hope it's meaningful for them. It's been meaningful to be part of it.
Another thing we talked about is your daughter wrote an op-ed in the New York Times.
NewYorkTimes.com, yes.
Yes. She
did an op-ed about...
And she is how old now?
She's 11. She was 10 when she and Barry Weiss, the editor, worked on it.
Because 11's a little late. Yeah. I'm glad she got it in at 10, because by 11, most people have written their op-ed in the New York Times.
She came up with this great idea to encourage girls to raise their hand in class. She noticed that boys would raise their hand, and even if they had no idea what the answer was, squirrels, they would do, you know. They would, but girls didn't do it. Girls were very reticent, very reluctant. And so she talked about it with her Girl Scout troop. She came up with the idea for a patch, a raise your hand patch, to encourage girls to raise their hand. And I tweeted that picture, the picture of the patch. I was so excited. And Barry Weiss from the New York Times saw it. And Alice wrote an op-ed for the Times.
And now it's being adapted. You guys, if you like that, you guys are going to be blown away by this. It's adapted into a book. Raise your hand.
Raise your hand. It's so great, right? It comes out in March. And it's basically Alice's story. Marta Kissy did the illustrations. They're amazing. And, that's Alice. That's what she looks like. She's cuter than that.
That's fantastic. You are also an accomplished artist. You do the State of Cartoonian every week.
State of Cartoonian every weekend.
Were you ever in the mix to maybe do the art for this book?
No, look how good this is. I mean, No. They asked me...
I mean, I'm not surprised. I also think this is better than yours. But I was wondering, you knew right away that you weren't going
to
get
the
gig.
I'm not that good. This is amazing stuff. They did ask me to do some illustrations that are in the liner notes. Like, you know, when you open the book, before you get to the pages, it's kind of like the very forgettable pages.
Yeah, the one you flip through because you're like, this
isn't
the book
yet. You don't even notice
that
this isn't the book. I'm not in the book. The liner notes have some illustrations. They're not in this copy here. They have some illustrations that I did. But I feel like they did that to make me feel better.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like they wanted to let you down easy for the fact
that... Alice has a big book coming out and, you know, but you can do the cartoons and not the ones that people will look at.
Are you a little... Obviously, you know, now you're both in the book game. Are you a little worried more people are going to buy Alice's books?
I hope more people buy your book than mine. Although, we should note, all of the money, Alice is donating all of it to the local chapter of the Girl Scouts.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah.
Because...
I'm pretty sure with both of your books, you famously kept all the money, right?
No. For the novel, I did. But I did give a portion of the outpost to military charities.
And let me just say real quick, because you you do so much with military charities, and you've helped me get involved with some of them as well. I remember reaching out to you to ask what some of the best are.
And every year when we do our auction, you donate a visit to the set here and a photo op for our auction to raise money for Homes for Our Troops.
But you have been so helpful with me. Do you feel like, you know, right now, obviously we have we're talking about, you know, when you mentioned John McCain, you mentioned George H.W. Bush, you know, obviously they served this country. We have a president who talks a lot about how he's the best president for the military ever. Real quick, is this country doing enough for our vets?
You know, never. We're never doing enough for our vets. I mean, the very fact that a charity like Homes for Our Troops has to exist, where it builds mortgage-free, specially designed homes for the most severely wounded veterans from Afghanistan and Iraq, just so they can have like some semblance of a normal life. The very fact that that charity has to exist says we're not doing enough for our veterans. But what I'm most concerned about right now is I think we're actually now at a point where more troops have killed themselves post-war than died in the first Iraq War or in the Iraq War, the most recent Iraq War, because of the rate of military suicides. And so dealing with that is something that I think society really has to grapple with.
Well, I certainly agree with you. And thank you for everything you do for the vets. And thank you for being here. It's always such a pleasure to see you.
Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah to you. Thanks, Tapper, everyone.
Hi, everyone. It's Sarah here at Late Night. I am backstage with Jake Tapper. Thanks for coming back. I think this was your seventh time.
Hello.
Seventh appearance.
How sensitive
today
is this microphone? I mean, is this good? Am I too close to it?
That's great.
Okay. Little BTS for everybody.
Turn off the TV.
Okay, so we talked about this a little bit on the phone, and you guys touched upon it with the Monday Night Football stuff.
Yes.
But I wanted to ask you, this is not what you do every day, but in terms of the NFL,
yeah,
what's the mood in Washington in terms of the Redskins and how people, fans or the city, views that team just historically, also with the acquisition of Reuben Foster?
Okay, so first of all, let me just say that I hate the Redskins. I always have. I'm an Eagles fan.
Yes.
And so I moved down to Washington and I just hate the team, and I don't, you know, there's nothing positive I have to say about it. And Dan Snyder, the owner, as far as I can tell, is one of the worst human beings that's ever lived. Right. Oh, there's our PR person as we're raising her. He seems like a really bad person. He just seems mean and not nice and
racist,
racist and amoral. And the fact that he would hire somebody with these issues, shall we say, I don't know what he's been convicted of and what he's been accused of, whatever. But like, doesn't surprise me. And it would, in fact, would surprise me if he doesn't run around and start picking up and hiring every single one, because he's completely amoral. And the truth of the matter is, I went to a college that has a Native American, like a big active Native American studies program, because the college was founded to educate Indians back in the day, back in the 1700s when everybody was horrible. And so I know a lot of Native Americans, and like I still can't believe that there is a team called the Redskins in 2018 in, by the way, one of the most liberal, progressive, diverse cities in America. It's amazing to me. So those are my thoughts on the Redskins.
Do you think that anything could be done in terms of NFL policy to stop teams from making bad decisions? I know something could be done, but do you think anything will be done?
It's all just about money, right? They're NFL owners. It's not about anything other than money. So if they feel like they can't make money unless they do X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not an expert on Colin Kaepernick enough to know whether or not he should be playing right now. But the fact is, Mark Sanchez played last night. And I mean, I think there are those who know more about football than I do who would say that Colin Kaepernick at least deserves the same chances as Mark Sanchez. So why hasn't he been afforded those chances? Because he's so controversial, because of the kneeling, et cetera. And the bottom line is that NFL owners make their decisions based on how much money they can make, because it's a business. And I think that that's how it is with all these things. At the end of the day, people make decisions based on the bottom line, NFL team owners. And so not hiring men who beat women will, you know, happen when it starts hurting them. But I don't know that that will, I don't know that that time will happen, since the NFL audience is largely men and men largely don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, not that they don't care, or we
care
don't
less,
care.
I'm
a man and I'm a football watcher. But I mean, like, not that, yeah, I mean, not, don't care enough to turn off the TV.
Right. you're a big Star Wars fan, and you talk about this thing called the Jar Jar Binks principle.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I'm a Star Wars fan.
Okay.
Because I hate the prequels.
Okay.
With a...
And that's where
the intensity of A Thousand Burning Suns.
And that's where this idea sort of came from,
right? Well, because it's a leadership principle
called
the Jar Jar Binks theory of leadership, which is that most successful people rise to a level where they get rid of all the people around them who tell them when their ideas are bad or when they're misbehaving. That's how you end up with people like Steve Wynn doing what he does. Or... Right. Yeah, I could go down a line. I could mention some people that have worked at NBC who no longer do, or CBS, or wherever, right?
Right.
I mean, it's not that tough to find them. It's unfair to George Lucas because all he did was put a Jamaican frog in his movies compared to some of the other horrible things that people have done, but it's an accessible way of getting at. He had removed from his orbit anybody that would say, you really shouldn't put the Jamaican frog in the movie because it really is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And while you're at it, they shouldn't be 7 hours long and they shouldn't be about... trade deals, et cetera, et cetera. But that's the theory, is that you can't fall victim to the Jar Jar Binks theory of leadership, which is you always have to have people around you who are willing to tell you when you're messing up. Now, I know Seth has that with Shu and with Alexi, certainly, who's a tough customer, as is my wife. And I have that on my staff. But you see other people in our business, whether comedy or news, that rise to a level and they're successful enough that, like, I don't want this person telling me I'm an ass
right
every day. Or I want to do this, and my executive producer doesn't, and they get a new executive producer. You find, you know what? Here's a good telltale. Has somebody had 7 executive producers in 5 years? If they had, they are falling victim to the Jar Jar Binks theory. That's one way to look at it.
I wonder if Dan Snyder is probably one of those people.
Well, I don't know. I mean, how's the team doing? How are the Redskins this year? They're actually
7-5.
I think they were 6-5. Yeah, so they're probably 6-6. I think they're the same as the Eagles right now. 6-6. It doesn't always work. The Jar Jar Binks there. You can actually be. This may be a surprise to you. You can actually be a 6 and remove everybody from your orbit who tells you you're an and still end up succeeding. That still happens quite a bit.
Yeah.
And you just pick up the paper, but. It's more instructive. It's more like a don't ever remove those people who are willing to tell you that, hey, you're overstepping your bounds.
Yeah. And that someone like President Trump maybe needs some of those people.
I think a lot of presidents, I'm not going to make an exception for him, but I think a lot of presidents remove from their orbits people who are anything other than yes people.
Mm-hmm.
And he certainly seems to be somebody who gets rid of people who offer him criticism, whether it's, I don't know, Gary Cohn or H.R. McMaster or et cetera, you know, Tillerson or whatever. But by the same token, I don't think Obama was surrounded by a bunch of harsh critics. Also who you are and what you want to do is relevant as well.
Right, right. Well, thank you so much.
What's Seth? Does Seth have people around him who can tell him? Shoemaker tells him if he's going
Shoemaker
too far.
Tells him. Well, he accepts feedback, I think. I mean, even from us. Like, he'll ask opinions on things, which... When I was in the booking department, he has very strict lines about people who have done things that are not great that he does not want on the show. That he draws a line with some bad individuals.
I can turn this into an even more juicy podcast by now pressing you. I won't, though, because it's...
Well, you know, somebody who, like, did something Reuben Foster did. Someone, like, as a person that he doesn't want to have a conversation with, which I find admirable. But, you know, he'll ask for feedback, and I think that's important because you want to... You want to hear what people have to say, especially people you trust that work for you.
Well, here are two people one who works for me and one who kind of works with me. Am I misrepresenting myself? See, now they're under pressure. I think I'm open-minded to criticism. Do you? They're nodding, but they're not voicing. They don't want to put their names to it. And they're also like, by the way, if I weren't the kind of person that took feedback, they would give the same answer.
Right.
Because they would be so scared that I would fire them. So it's a horrible question. It's a horrible test. It's like now they're bowing.
All right, we'll let you go. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.